Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time. Your fix is here. College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's JC and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and J.C. Sherbert of 24-7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
Thank you for stopping by. It is another installment of J.C. and Morgan. We do record this live for those that are tuning in live on every platform imaginable. If you want to see our shining faces, that would be on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. If you'd rather just listen while you're driving or working out or whatever you might be into, Spotify, been big for us. iTunes, big for us. Google Play, yes, I have a Google phone. You heard me right. I will never, never give in to the man and the Apple world. Instead, I'm selling out to Google, which is just another part of the cabal. He is J.C. Sherbert, coming to you from Chi-Town, where the current temperature, I'm guessing, about 58. Just spitballing over here.
No, that's why I don't get to go see the Braves and Sox, because it's about 38. Out. It's 38 and rainy. Last night, I think the Braves Nation got to see just how bad the White Sox were. There were more Braves fans in the stands than White Sox fans.
And they called it after 8 innings.
40, a very close, competitive 9-0 baseball game.
Ouch.
Hey, the food's guaranteed rate field. The food's actually better than it is at Wrigley. They got some good exotic options, but you're going to have to just be hungry when you go to the ballpark this year on the south side. It's going to be a long year.
38 there. I'm coming to you from Studio South in West Palm Beach, where it's 78. Sunny, slight breeze, JC, just enough to let you know. The kind of weather you could probably expect for a lot of spring football games, which are right around the corner, and we'll talk about some spring football. We're not going to break down every list and ranking, but there was one out there that got me just thinking about quarterback play in the SEC this year. Because when we start breaking down teams, you know, that it all starts there, and then returning starters and everything else. So we'll touch on that a little bit. Our friend Andy Staples is back. He's on a new mission, much like Barrett Salee. A lot of these writers have been kind of pivoting to different formats and different things, but they still cover college football nationally. So if you haven't noticed what we've been doing here lately, We've been on kind of a guest tour of some of the best and brightest that cover the sport, from, gosh, Tom Luganbill to Dan Wetzel to Ross Dellinger to Tim Brando last week. Barrett Salee was on, and now we get Andy Staples, who we haven't had on in a couple of years. He's been on with us before, does a great job, and again, he's now doing more of what we're doing. He's more in the podcast world, JC.
He's in good shape, too, looking good, and yeah, he's one of my favorite people because he has an affinity for barbecue and
yes,
good food, and good story, too. Walked on for the Gators under Spurrier, so you know, he played it, lived it. Great guy. I was happy to see him landed on three, obviously, with the leaders of that company. I have a long, long history. And I always think people that, you know, land there, they're in a good spot, you know, because of the respect I have for Shannon and the people that run that company. So looking forward to that discussion quite a lot.
Yeah, Andy's always great. I think the last time we had him on, you know, the remnants of the COVID era with just complete disarray and people trying to cancel the season and the political plays that so many people were making. And I think I made the analogy, and I don't know if he appreciated this or not, but I said he's the Paul Rudd of national college football pundits. And by that I meant Paul is a really good actor and he's extremely likable, and no one has a negative word to say about Paul Rudd. Women love Paul Rudd. He's kind of non-threatening. He's funny. He's a decent-looking guy. And men like Paul Rudd. I actually met Paul Rudd in Atlanta when they were filming Anchorman 2. That was a night. Met Paul Rudd, Will Ferrell, Steve Carell. That was like 10 years ago, but it was an amazing night. But Paul Rudd is just like everybody is – nobody has a disagreeable opinion about Paul Rudd. A lot of these college football guys, some people like them, some people don't. Some people, I think some of them intentionally try and kind of polarize a little bit to get some more attention. That's not what Andy Staples does. So I don't agree with everything that Andy Staples says or any of these guys, but that's the beauty of it. You don't have to agree with everything. So we'll have Andy on and talk about his new venture and get just another voice weighing in on the upcoming college football season. We'll have the JC5 momentarily. I have to just say this at the top. So we are recording this live the less than 24 hours after, I think, one of the biggest days for women's college basketball that has ever happened. And that, of course, is Caitlin Clark in Iowa taking down LSU, and then UConn with Paige Beckers taking on Juju Watkins. And taking down Southern Cal. Full disclosure, just so you know, I mean, I've broadcasted several women's college basketball games over my time, radio and TV. And when I do a women's college basketball game, I get immersed in it. I love it. I prepare for it every bit as hard as I do for a men's broadcast. That being said, I don't watch things or pump up things because I feel like that's the narrative that is going to go along with what everybody else is saying. I'm at a stage in my life where I don't feel the need to do that. I probably never have, but especially now at this point in my life, like I'm not going to sit there and go, geez, everybody seems to be raving about Caitlin Clark, so I guess I better chime in and also tweet out she's fantastic. I don't do that. And I'm not going to tell you that I'm just completely enthralled by women's college basketball, because there's clearly a movement to do that and to get you believe that. I mean, you got some that just take it over the top. It's clearly better than the men's game. Really? Based on what? What are you basing that on? That's just kind of the en vogue thing to say. And you filled out your women's college basketball bracket. You really watched that 2:15 matchup that was over 10 minutes into the, don't insult the conversation by just catering to what you feel like the popular opinion is. So I say all that to say this, JC, I made a point. My wife and I made a point. I told her like at 7 o'clock, I'm going to be parked in front of the TV and watch Iowa LSU, because I truly had an interest in that. I truly believe Caitlin Clark, and no disrespect to Paige Beckers, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins, to the great players before that we've seen, you know, Breonna Stewart, Diana Taurasi, the great players at Tennessee during the Pat Summitt era. No disrespect to all of them. I've never seen, and if we're being honest, I think I have a pretty critical eye on this when it comes to the sport of basketball. You haven't seen, you being America and the world, haven't seen a player like Caitlin Clark. You can debate who's the best of all time, and that's fine. That's great talk show fodder, and I'll let the carnival barkers in the morning, on the morning shows, yell and scream about who they believe and offer up more disingenuous takes. But if I can just tell you that nobody's ever played the game on the women's side like Caitlin Clark. For that matter, very few on the men's side have played the game like Caitlin Clark. So she's a phenom. She's a unique talent. She is the closest thing to Steph Curry the women's game has had. You know, I wasn't alive for Pistol Pete, but she does have some of that in her DNA. There's no question. So to watch her to do what she's doing, and with all due respect to her supporting cast, she doesn't have what Angel Reese has at LSU. She doesn't have what Paige Beckers has at UConn, and she certainly doesn't have what Dawn Staley's team has in terms of a 1 through 10 roster that's just stacked and loaded. So everybody, she's not just the top of the scouting report. She's like the only thing on the scouting report, and they still can't stop her. So I watched it. I was incredibly entertained. And then I watched Juju Watkins and the next game and Paige Beckers, and I was entertained by that. Does that mean all of a sudden I'm going to be locked in and we're going to dedicate JC? Maybe we'll do a special preseason women's basketball edition of JC and Morgan. Not likely. But I there are certain stories that come across that transcend everything else. I don't know what the ratings are yet. I predicted it's going to be a phenomenal number for ESPN. Phenomenal number. And if Caitlin makes it to the finals, again, she is somebody that people tune into that could care a lick about basketball. Forget about women's basketball. They just don't care about the sport, period. But you're like, oh my goodness, this is just different. So we are a football podcast. We are a college football podcast or show as part of the Great Chief Sports Network. Thank you, Jamie. But I felt that is on the top of everybody's mind, and we'll get Andy's thoughts on it too. So I had to just offer up my two cents on that. She came in overly hyped, and I don't say that in a bad way, but that's TV. She's not asking for the hype. TV does this. They know when they've got a story that's captured the country, and she lives up to it. And then some. 41 points, a dozen assists, when everybody knows you are the focal point of everything they do. So kudos to her, and kudos to a great day for women's college basketball, because I think you certainly will gain some traction with what happened last night.
Sure. And looking forward to watch them go down to Geno in the semis or get blown out in the finals.
Yeah, well, you might not be wrong. I mean, I'm
joking. I'm not trying to analyze that game. 30 seconds into that is the most we've talked about women's basketball in this podcast. So when people do talk about a transformational figure in a sport, Mike, as good as UConn, South Carolina, NC State's a good story, we wouldn't be talking about it right now. Neither would anybody else. You know, I go to in the neighborhood or the town I live in outside of Chicago. The wife and I have a favorite little watering hole we go into, but it's where our friends hang out. They're talking about Caitlin Clark in there. Yeah. That's a group that if women's basketball previously had been on TV, hey, turn the channel now. We're watching golf, Bears, hockey, Cubs, right. White Sox. That's it. Right. Maybe U of I, you know, and they let me watch Southeastern Conference football because they know I'm from the South and they like me. But, you know, now it's like, get that Caitlin Clark on the TV. Get her. She's good. She's good. You know, so that's just kind of how it is. And I'm looking forward to it myself, man. I'd be lying if I said I didn't tune in last night to at least part of that game. So I think you're right. I think, look, here's the problem with women's basketball. It loses a ton of money. So in my opinion, if you like college sports in general, and there's all this talk about money, you want that sport to start making more money. I don't know if it'll ever be profitable, but if you can get it towards breaking even, great. And if it takes a superstar like that, great. You know, so I think all that's very positive for the college in a time where the college athletics community doesn't have a lot of positive going on. I think that is very positive.
Yeah, they've caught lightning in a bottle. They really have. You know, there's been a surge with softball. I don't think it's anything like this. I know some people tune in. They love softball. It's a quick game. It's easy to follow. But you don't know the players. You don't know the players like you do. You've just had this confluence of superstars, and that's what drives people to a sport generally that they don't otherwise care about. It has to be about the players. Yes, the name on the front of the jersey gets those specific fan bases involved. The name on the back of the jersey is what is going to be transformational. And someone like Caitlin Clark, and I don't know if there's another one. Like, I watched Juju Watkins. She's a talent. She's not this type of player that Caitlin Clark is. Paige Beckers is talented. And Angel Reese, who makes headlines for a number of different reasons, is talented. But Caitlin Clark is just different. I don't know what else to tell you. So I like I said, thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought that was worth a mention at the top. We've, like you said, we've already surpassed in the years we've been doing this show. We've surpassed our allotment of cumulative allotment of women's college basketball talk in the first few minutes of the show.
Let's do one more thing, though. I'll get your 30-second take on a question from the chat box, and I'll add: she's Magic Johnson, she's Larry Bird, she's Michael Jordan, she's Kobe Bryant. She's a player that's come along at a time when a league or a conference or a sport on the college level needed it, needed a boost, and she's done it. You know, if you think about the history of the NBA through the years, when the NBA's gained popularity or whatever, they've had those superstars come through. Mm-hmm. So Hayne asked, do you think the TV contracts will improve to the point they break even? I know they just recently re-upped. Your thoughts on the TV end, because that's your expertise.
What's hard to totally make a lucid answer to that question is that they combine everything into that contract. So it's like football has their own deals, as we know. The specific conferences have their own contracts. Men's basketball, $1 billion a year with CBS and Turner. And then the other contract, which was always like all the Olympic sports, and they just lumped women's basketball in. Well, women's basketball is still kind of lumped in, but clearly the number went up. ESPN spent a lot more money, and they didn't do so for men's wrestling or women's volleyball. They did so specifically in women's basketball. Their gambling will be able to yield more money. Now, is it ever going to yield $1 billion? No. It's not. We're not in that ballpark. That's apples and oranges. But it certainly helps. You know, when you have the elite programs losing $3, $4, $5 million a year, there's something. If we're going to look everything like a business model, which is what the student athletes in football and men's basketball want you to do, well, then if we're going to do that for those sports, why wouldn't we do it for the other sports? If we're going to look at it as a business model, right now it's leaking financially, but clearly universities and athletic departments are willing to take the hit in order to be good at something that still gets fans excited. So yeah, I think to Hayne's question, it's better. It's not going to be a revenue producer anytime soon. I think that's a clear distinction to make. All right, before we take our first time out and get ready for the JC5, I do want to mention a couple of our proud sponsors. Of course, Site Pro Rentals, which we've talked about a number of times, and Nest and Wild. Nest and Wild, I just got my mattress in the mail. I mean, like, not actually a mailbox. Like, literally, they'll ship it out to you. In a couple of days, you open up the box and poof, you have like the most comfortable mattress on the planet. They're a great story, a local business straight out of Tupelo, Mississippi. And they just decided we're going to do things better, but less expensive than your premier mattresses. I've slept on everything from Sleep Comfort to the cheapest of the cheap. And this has a good price point, and it is most definitely comfortable. I got one years ago. And I was like, this is unbelievable. Now they have their hybrid bed, their high-performance hybrid bed, 5 layers of just sleep euphoria. Unbelievable. And again, it can be delivered to you in just a matter of days. Don't take my word for it. Give it a shot. If you don't like it, send it back. But I promise you, you will like it. Go to nestandwild.com for more information on how to order yours. That's Nest and Wild. Great local business.
They send it right to you in the mail, huh?
Right to you. Like a bite. You order it, and then it comes in a box like 2-3 days later. And you just open it up, and it just...
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
No. It's yeah, I got one of them. I bought one off of Amazon when I first moved up here. I don't know.
I got it.
Let's just say I'm in the market for a new. Now, what sizes? They all sizes?
All sizes. So I have a king and I have a full.
Of course.
And they have the queen. King. Yeah, they got it all. They got it all. And
of course, you have a king, Mike. Of course.
Well, I'm.
We're looking to upgrade.
Got to have my space. I like to sleep diagonally, which doesn't make the wife very happy. But nevertheless, yeah, Nest and Wild, again, just the most comfortable. I don't know what they do. I don't have time to explain it, but it's like I said, it's five layers. It's high density. It's high airflow, heavy, cool touch cover, all the good stuff right there in a Nest and Wild mattress. I'm proud to have them on board here on JC and Morgan. We're proud to have the JC Five when we come back. And, of course, Andy Staples at the top of the hour as well. JC and Morgan rolls on right after this.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
Hey, folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
Mike.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. Site Pro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. Site Pro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call Site Pro and rent from the local, friendly, easy to do business with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's time for the top topics in the sport. We bring the JC Five. Number one.
Thank you, Mr. Announcer.
All right, here we go. JC Five. I've talked many times about the Big 12 teams and just how many in the new conference have been right knock on the door through the years. I think only BYU has a national championship, which they won in 84, unless I'm missing one from way back in yonder days without face masks. So you got Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Cincinnati's been to a playoff. You got Kansas State was knocking on the door, Utah that was knocking on the door of the playoff. So do you think with all these teams together and the expanded playoff, does this increase or decrease the chances of one of the eight or nine, breaking through and winning it all?
Well, look, I don't think there's much good that comes out of losing Texas, Oklahoma, because those were clearly your two best bets. Although Oklahoma over the last 20 something years since Stoops won his in back in what, 99, they couldn't get over the hump. They won a lot of games, a lot of Heisman trophies, played in a lot of big games, but just could not get over the hump. Texas had their big year under Mack with Vince Young. In what, 2005, working over Southern Cal in one of the best national championship games of our lifetime. So losing those two doesn't help. But what is great about the Big 12, I think it'll be the most competitive, the most diversified in terms of conference champions every year. You can throw out the cliche that every league likes to throw out, but it doesn't apply. Anybody can win it this year in the Big 12. That'll be true. That'll be true a lot of the times. That do I think any of those programs are going to be knocking on the doorstep anytime soon? Here's my concern with that, JC. I don't want to make it about the money, but I can't ignore the money. I can't ignore the discrepancy. The amount of money coming in under these new TV deals and playoff deal that the Big 12, and for that matter, the ACC, you're going to have to swim upstream to try and catch the SEC and the Big 10. Does money buy you championships? No. If it did, Texas would be sitting on a dozen of them over the last 20 years. But it does keep you competitive in an NIL world. And you know, the oil money will take care of the facilities and everything, and that's great. But I don't know if they're going to have enough in terms of, in some cases, exposure. You know, we kind of have a de facto Big 12 network on ESPN Plus. And again, you're just not going to have nearly as much as the tens of millions of dollars more that the SEC and Big Ten are bringing in. So I think there's a lot of great stories in the Big 12, JC. My biggest concern, I just don't see one of those teams breaking through. I hope I'm wrong. I think it'd be good for the sport to see one of them taste the gold, but I don't know if I see it right away.
They all have recruiting limitations, what I call recruiting limitations. The Texas schools obviously are in Texas, and they've proven through the years they can out-evaluate. Baylor and TCU were much better than Texas and A&M for a while. But they're still not the first choice in that state. You have no teams for California, Utah, Colorado. Kansas doesn't produce talent. Iowa doesn't produce talent. West Virginia certainly doesn't. with the exception of UCF, which is still not Florida, Florida State, Miami in that state, you don't really have, you know, a whole lot of like Ohio State. I'm the school in a big state that produces talent. LSU, that kind of, there's no school with that kind of advantage. So I'm curious to see, can they piece something together from the portal and have talent and Big Ten, SEC are down one year, and can they do a Clemson and win one? Depends on the school and sort of, they're going to have to work their way up to it. But it's just interesting when you look at all these teams that at times have knocked, they were right there, hadn't been able to kick down the door. Now they're all in the same league. So the other day I saw a tweet.
Number two.
The other day I saw a tweet yesterday, I think, and it said, Alabama is the best combined football and men's basketball school in the country. I think this year, Mike, true. I think NC State, Clemson, Tennessee also were probably the runners-up. Historically, though, no. And the tweet was in context of they are the best. So my question with you is, so, yeah, Alabama is right now, but historically, you know, who would you say is the best combines in Michigan? Michigan would be on my list, but I want to see what you think about that, brother.
Michigan would be up there. Now, when they won it with Ramil Robinson and, what, 89 over Seton Hall, where was Michigan football in 89? You know, I'd have to go back. That'd be a nice little Google search, I guess, but I don't know if Michigan was, I mean, I don't think in our lifetime we're ever going to see what Florida did 06 to 08. So just to recall, 06, Urban Meyer, national championship. Billy Donovan in basketball, national championship. 07, Billy Donovan, second national championship in basketball. 08, Urban Meyer, second national championship in football. So in a three-year span, they won two titles in football. And two titles in basketball, which is why Florida fans are wondering what the hell happened. How do you go from that level of dominance to Billy Napier unable to get to a 500 record and Florida basketball, and they made it to the tournament. But, you know, again, they haven't been to a Final Four in quite some time. By the way, the 89 Wolverines, 10-2. Thank you, Phil. Producer.
Well, the Rose Bowl lost to SC, so they won the Big Ten that year.
Was that Elvis Gerbeck? Who's QB in that year?
Maybe Elvis Gerbeck. Bo Schembechler was the coach.
Bo was the coach, yeah. I'm just wondering who.
Now, Michael Taylor was the quarterback, and Tony Bowles and
Tyrone Wheatley. Who's the back? I'm sure Tony they were Bowles. Ground and pound. Tony Bowles?
Tony Bowles. 89? Greg McMurtry was the receiver, and then they were a defensive football team.
If you're listening, that's for you. A huge Michigan fan that tunes in Atlanta. There's your trip down memory lane.
They only gave up over 20 points like 4 times the whole year. I mean, even the games they lost were low scoring to Notre Dame and Lou Holtz, and then 17-10 in the Rose Bowl to SC.
Well, in the interest of time, I'll just keep this short, but the SEC, and again, those who know my background, you understand this is kind of in my wheelhouse, but I say with 100% objectivity, the level of basketball in the SEC has improved immensely. The level of football hasn't declined. So Alabama's not going to be the only story like this. Auburn made a Final Four under Bruce Pearl. Tennessee eventually is going to knock down that door. Tennessee would have been a partial answer to this question, JC, not long ago, but they have to do deeper tournament runs, and they have to break that glass and get to their first ever Final Four. Georgia not being good in basketball is a mystery that I haven't been able to figure out yet, and I've covered it and covered them as part of my SEC duties for over 20 years, and it's an enigma. LSU. Now LSU had an 06 Final Four, and they had an 07 Natty under Nick Saban, right? 07 title in football, 06 Final Four in basketball. Yep. LSU has been to 4 Final Fours, I believe, and they've won multiple national championships in football. So that's one. But there's no reason why LSU can't be outstanding in both sports. They're still recovering from the Will Wade era, but, you know.
the 80s, like when you had Barry Switzer and Billy Tubbs, Oklahoma was the best team in the country in basketball and lost to Danny Manning and the Miracles.
Yeah, in 88.
So, hey, check this out. When Texas and
number
Oklahoma
three.
One thing, when Texas and Oklahoma joined the league, now that Alabama's been to the Final Four, that will be 10 of the 16 schools have been to the Final Four.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I actually I meant to go over that on ITG, as a matter of fact. But Alabama joins Kentucky, Florida, Auburn, Georgia, LSU, Arkansas, South Carolina, Mississippi State, as teams that have now been in the Final Four from the current SEC. And of course, you include Texas, Oklahoma, and there's two more.
Yeah, so that's actually 2, 4, 6. No, that's actually 11. And I don't know if Missouri Correct. Snuck in the 1940s or not.
They so did anyway. Not. Missouri has never been past the Elite Eight.
Yeah, so onward and upward with the next one, producer. Yes.
Number three.
All right, my man. I'm going to probably ask you a question that you're probably biased toward, but since you were an athlete in that state, but I agree with Deion Sanders. They asked Deion point blank, who are the big, what state produces the biggest dogs in football? and he went and he's probably biased too, but I agree with him because I've been all over the country, California, Texas, Ohio, Louisiana. I've gushed about different talent pockets outside of this state, but you want a large number of kids that love to play the game, that know how to play it the right way, which is physical, tough, smart, with the great athletes. Nothing beats Florida, in my opinion. And yeah, that's Deion's opinion, your opinion, and you actually played high school football, Mike. So you give us yours.
I did. I wasn't quite Deion. I had a little speed back in the day, but definitely not Deion speed. From a speed standpoint, I would put the. As Jimmy Johnson used to call it, the University of South Florida, talking about Miami, the 5-6-1, the 305, the 954, that's Palm Beach, Broward, and Dade counties. Like the amount of speed that would come out of those counties is ridiculous. Now, if we're thinking dog is just like the most physical, you could probably go with a number of other states. But I think from just a pure speed standpoint, and you're right, maybe I'm a little biased on this. I year in, year out, is there a state that produces more track speed on a gridiron than Florida does? And that's why all these schools from all over the country, they invade the state, and particularly that part of the country, and they try to get athletes to come up north. And when Shiano had it going at Rutgers, they had billboards in South Florida, how you need to become a Scarlet Knight. Ohio State, ton of South Florida guys. Out west, not quite as many because most of those kids don't want to travel that far. But they'll go to Texas. Several of them have. They'll go from anywhere from Texas to Ohio State. If a Northeast program really has it going, they'll go there. And as you've pointed out several times with your background in recruiting, JC, it's not just the 5 and the 4-star guys. It's those under-the-radar guys, the 2 and 3s, that coaches from other states are like, okay, if Florida State, Miami don't want you, if UCF doesn't want you, we'll take a flyer on you. I'll take that 4-3-9 and turn you into a player. That's been a common trend for a long time. And with the population growth continuing in that state, I don't expect that to change anytime soon.
Number 4.
Did Carson Beck surprise you last year? Were you, like, generally surprised how good he was?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I had my I always say this. This is not picking on any player. I'm a big, until you've done it, I'm a little bit of Missouri. I'm a show-me guy. So you can come in with a lot of hype and a lot of hoopla, and in his case, physicals. Like, he's an NFL talent. He could have been a second-round pick this year, even in a loaded quarterback class. That's where he was projected. Now, he got a 7-figure NIL deal. He's driving around in some fancy car. It's too fancy for me to even know what it is. It's beyond a Ferrari and a Lamborghini. It's something. It's really fast, and I don't have it. So I'm jealous, Carson, please. How about, spread the wealth a little bit? No, I mean, he proved it last year. I mean, gosh, 72% yards per attempt, 9.5. That's 6th best in the country. And when they needed him in big moments in big games, he came through. So I was quick to caution Georgia fans, like, say what you will about Stetson Bennett. He's not an NFL talent in terms of arm strength and body. Like, he'll hold a clipboard in the NFL for a while. Carson Beck, how would he do? And the answer is he did quite well. He did quite well. So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised. You know, you look at the starting quarterbacks returning in the SEC, Beck, Milroe, Ewers, Dart, Brady Cook, and then there's Nico of Tennessee. I mean, all those guys have NFL potential. Some are already there. Some have potential. But there's some studs coming back in the SEC stable of quarterbacks.
Number five.
Let's say that the Super Conference thing happens. Francis Ford Coppola's got this movie coming out called Megapolis, by the way. And every time I think about Super Conferences now, I think about that movie. And I'm like, wow. 48 or 64, Mike.
You're a clerk, JC. You're a clerk running an errand, Aaron boy.
An errand boy. Sit by grocery clerks to collect a bill.
I love that scene.
That's pretty good.
Are you an assassin? You're neither. Anyway,
I'm taking this over your Lou Holtz. I want more Brando.
I've got a decent Brando, especially okay. Apocalypse Now. Especially
yeah.
Apocalypse. Godfather, you get too mush mouthed sometimes. But, yes. But anyway, so 48 or 64? What's your preference? I'm a 64 man because I like a lot of programs. Just like I mentioned, Arizona State that could get left out. If you lop it at 48, I'm a 64 person, but what do you think is ideal?
Oh, I hope it's 64. I really, really hope 64 or 65 with Notre Dame. I don't want to see more programs left out in the cold. It still makes me uncomfortable what's happened to Washington State and Oregon State. You don't think if like a Mississippi State, if they didn't have such a strong tie with the SEC that they couldn't be that type of program that's just left in the wind. I know our guest Dan Wetzel kind of was cautioning us that could happen to even SEC and Big Ten programs. I don't know if that's happening anytime soon. I think you're kind of grandfathered in. It's going to take a lot. It's a really bad look for a conference to kick you out just because you're not better when you're so entrenched in it. But I do hope that, I don't want to have too many more that are left in the cold and basically relegated to 1AA status. As I've said all along, you know, Group 5 is the new 1AA because you can't compete with the Power 5. Well, now we're down to Power 4, and then pretty soon we might be down to Power 2. And my concern will be if we're down to Power 2, those other programs that are not in the quote-unquote NFC, AFC are in a world of hurt, and I don't like that for the sport. I'm not an elitist. I think we want to keep some of the things that are really good about college football, and one of those things is that we have a number of programs that have their own special charm and elegance, and they have the ability to compete for high stakes even if they don't normally get there. At least they can say they have a shot.
I don't remember if Andy had 48 or 64, but he did a sketch on it, so it's a good. It's a good time to take a break and get to him.
Let's do that.
Five, and ask him what he thinks about this, because I'm curious. He does a really, really, really good job with covering all this stuff.
He does. We'll see if he loves the smell of napalm in the morning as JC and Morgan rolls on here on the Chief Sports Network.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. Site Pro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. Site Pro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call Site Pro and rent from the local friendly, easy to do business with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, you know, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans, where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how bourbon whiskey got its name. And chicken cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, in which is today Bourbon County.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we are back. It is JC and Morgan, again, presented by Chicken Cock Whiskey, as well as Site Pro Rentals and Nest and Wild Mattress. He is JC Sherbert in Chicago. Mike Morgan here in Studio South, down in South Florida. And I don't know, Andy's been all over the place. I know he was just in Tuscaloosa recently interviewing Kalen DeBoer. Andy, where are you?
I'm at home.
You're at home, back in Gainesville. Okay.
Yeah. No, I finally got home and was in Knoxville last week and Tuscaloosa last week, and very interesting two programs that are very, very excited about things. The reports of Alabama's demise are quite premature, I assure you. I think they're feeling pretty good about things.
Yeah, well, I know you're feeling pretty good about things. We were showering you with praise at the top. We've been busy with a lot of people kind of in your space that cover college football nationally, and we've had a number of guests each and every week. And we're like, we haven't had Andy on in a couple of years. I think that's one.
I am the competition, you know. On three is the competition, so I understand. It happens.
It's competition in some levels for me, but it's not. I mean, I like those guys. I've lived where you're living a couple times. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's competition.
There's nothing but love on this side of the table. It's like the Bobs in Office Space.
Yeah, it's like Bobs.
Exactly, is it? You say you do here.
Well,
I work with people.
That's debatable. That's debatable. No, we were talking. It's been a couple of years since we've had you on, and at the time that was still kind of like the remnants of COVID was still going on, and I thought,
oh yeah,
you handled that about as well as can be expected amongst the national guys. I think I even called you the Paul Rudd of college football national guys, and that nobody has a bad word to say about Andy Staples. You're not polarizing. You just do your job. You give an opinion when necessary, but for the most part, you love college football, and you want to bring it to the people. Am I right in the saying that? Can I still call you the Paul Rudd of the profession?
I'll take it. Look at us. Yeah. But I think I express some fairly strong opinions, and that does make people mad sometimes. But then I don't really care. Like it, I always enjoy the Andy hates your team thing. Like, I don't hate your team. I love your team. Except when I don't. And I will tell you that. And
right.
if that's a problem, don't worry. Come back in 6 months. I'll probably say something bad about your rival and you'll love me. So
exactly. Exactly.
It all works out.
So we were talking, for those that don't know, because you obviously were working for a different employer the last time we've had you on. Why don't we start with this? Tell everybody what you're doing and who you're doing it for.
So I'm at On3 now. I was at The Athletic before that. I was at Sports Illustrated. But now I'm at On3, and I do a show every day, 8 a.m. Eastern time on the On3 YouTube channel. So Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern time. And then it's obviously on demand anytime after that. And you know, if we have a good interview, like we had Kalen DeBoer on the show on Monday, we're going to split that off. You can just watch that on demand if you want to. And I would highly recommend watching that if you are interested in what happens post Nick Saban at Alabama, because if you didn't get to know Kalen DeBoer while he was at Washington last year, then maybe you don't understand kind of the level of success he's had throughout his career. I don't know that there's going to be a ton of drop off. And I realize for most people elsewhere in the SEC, it's like, oh crap, come on. We were hoping that Nick Saban leaves and suddenly this is not what it was. I think it's going to be kind of close to what it was. And so, but yeah, I'm doing essentially a lot of the same job I was doing before. I had a podcast at The Athletic. We've expanded the hell out of that. And that's, you know, that's a daily show now. And we have a ton of fun on that show. And like, you know, we hit almost all of college sports. We've talked a lot of NCAA tournament here in the last few weeks. This morning's show, we spent half the show on Iowa LSU last night. I mean, that was a hell of a game. So I just, whatever people are interested in, we've got it. We also, on today's show, I had Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl on, and he and I just sort of imagined DJ Burns, the NC State post player, as a as an offensive tackle, and then spent the time, like, we talked about some of the basketball guys that have transitioned into the NFL, but also, like, just some of the ones we wished had tried football. Like, just maybe try it. And, like, my one that I always felt like is the one that got away, and he clearly made the right decision because he's still in the NBA right now. But if you go back and look at Jay Crowder, who plays for the Bucks now, when he played at Marquette, dude's from Villarica, Georgia. Like, should have been an SEC tight end, should be an NFL tight end right now. But he's the sixth or seventh guy on the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know exactly what he makes. He's probably like $22 million a year guaranteed. So I think he probably made the right choice.
Yeah. There's a few players like that when I'm doing college basketball. Like, LSU has a guard that used to play at South Carolina, a point guard who's like 6 feet, and he looks like an outside linebacker, just built like a brick, you know what house. And I do the same thing. I find myself seeing a certain college basketball athlete, and I'm like, golly, he would be a hellraiser on the football
field. Well, I, when I was at SI, I would cover the NCAA tournament in person every year. And I had VCU one year, and Mo Ali Cox was playing for VCU, and we got around his locker like, dude, why don't you play football? And sure enough, he plays for the Colts now.
Yeah, no, they're out there for sure. Let's go back to the Kalen DeBoer thing for a moment, because and you know, you probably vote on like 20 of these things. I only vote on two things every year. The Heisman Trophy, which I've voted for like the last 16, 17 years. And the Home Depot Coach of the Year. And my vote was Kalen DeBoer. And so and that forced me to do more of a deep dive on his background and just like how good he's been everywhere he's been. So I'm totally with you on the hire. I don't believe this whole thing. If Alabama didn't learn anything from Mike DuBose and Mike Shula, like the whole, I've got to hire an Alabama guy. No, you don't. Nick Saban had no ties to Alabama whatsoever, and he's the GOAT, and obviously worked out pretty well. The Kalen DeBoer hire makes all the sense in the world. And you obviously came away with that interview impressed with everything that he brings, the energy, the intangibles, and the track record speaks for itself. But all that being said, I mean, you have to like look at it and say, fairly or unfairly, every time this guy, first off, with an expanded playoff, if Alabama doesn't make a playoff, it's going to be just the sky is falling.
Yeah.
If they're not playing for national titles by like what, year three, he is going to face the most brutal scrutiny of anybody in college football. Oh, yeah. So
I mean, they've
how
got
does he react to that?
He's fine with it. He understands that's what it is. He's got to be playing for national titles in year one. He understands that. What's so interesting is it's a smaller scale, but his first head coaching job was exactly the same situation. So the only difference was he was the internal hire there. So he, for those who don't know, Caleb DeBoer grew up in South Dakota. He went to the University of Sioux Falls. He was a receiver. He helped them win a national title in the NAIA in 1996. He starts coaching right after his career ends. He was their OC from 2000 to 2004, and they were really good. So Bob Young was the name of the head coach. They were 47-5 in Bob Young's last 4 years as the head coach. So he steps down. Kalen DeBoer takes over. So he's taking over a program that has been 47-5 over the previous 4 years. So clearly there's a lot of, like, it's not Alabama. There's not millions of people watching, but there's tons of pressure because you're taking over a program where all they do is win. So what does he do? Well, he loses two games that first year. They make it to the NAIA semifinals. That's just not good enough, Kalen. Well, the next 3 years, he goes 56-1 and wins three national titles. Or so the next 4 years. 4 years. 56-1, three national titles. Like, he's lost 12 games as a head coach. He's 104-12. Three of those losses are in the COVID year as Fresno State's coach. So I don't know if we can even count those. He went 9-3 in his first full year as Fresno State's coach. And so that's what you're talking about. This is a guy who's won everywhere. And so I would be genuinely concerned if I'm the rest of the SEC about maybe Alabama not dropping off very much at all, even though it's not Nick Saban.
Let me ask something, Andy. A&M and Bama opened this year, and it sounds weird even saying that, but those are two schools obviously with unlimited resources. Mm-hmm. And unlike maybe some coaching searches in the past at some other schools around the league, it looked like this time they both went for the best ball coach they could find. Who's a winner?
Well, no, A&M went for Mark Stoops first.
He's a ball coach, you know.
He wins. He wins, but not against teams with winning records in the SEC play. That's a very good problem. Point. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because Mike Elko, kind of a similar profile to Mark Stoops, where longtime great defensive coordinator and then successful as a head coach. The difference, I think, with Elko is there's not the body of work. I think the body of work with Mark Stoops says he recruits really well above his station, and he also develops really well, but he tends to not let his OC have a lot of fun. And Elko so far, and it's only a 2 year sample size, but it seems like he's willing to let his OC cook a little bit. And
yeah,
you know, Kevin Johns at Duke, we'll see what happens with Colin Klein at Texas A&M. But no, I'm with you there. There was none of this. We got to find somebody from in the family. I think people have kind of figured that out. Like, I think you watched USC post Pete Carroll, and it was always trying to recreate that magic with somebody who'd been on his staff. And then they realized, you know what? That's not how it works. That's not the best way to do it. Now, weirdly enough, one of those guys, Steve Sarkisian, seems to have kind of figured it out at Texas, but it took some doing. But yeah, I think the idea of you have to have a guy who has a tie to the school, who worked there before, or who played there, you got to understand how it feels to these people. It's a job. It's like your job. There are going to be days where it's great, days where it's terrible, but they're going to look at it like you would look at your job. Like, is this a good place for my family? It's not going to be like, I have all this nostalgia from when I went there. Like, that doesn't matter. There's only a few Steve Spurrier stories. And look, Steve Spurrier happened to get to Florida when it was ripe to take off. But Steve Spurrier also was the best coach South Carolina ever had and the best coach Duke ever had because he's a great coach. Like, it wouldn't have mattered. If he'd have gone somewhere other than Florida, he still would have done that. So that's the part people don't understand. Like, it's just a job for these guys.
Yeah, like Roy Williams in basketball going back to North Carolina. I mean, you know, that was, he obviously has an affinity for the school, but he also won how many games at Kansas, you know?
Right, and exactly. Roy Williams was going to win anywhere.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So that's, I just found it interesting that you know, they didn't really hire recruiters either. I mean, these guys are evaluators more so than like they're known like a hotshot recruiter, you know, like a Dabo Swinney
type guy. I don't know about that. It kind of depends on your job. And I think Elko's been in places where you had to be an excellent recruiter. But remember how Elko came up. You know, he was working with Dave Clawson. He was at they were at Hofstra and Bowling Green. Well, actually, I think he was at Richmond with Clawson. But Richmond and Bowling Green and Wake Forest, where you don't have it. You're not going to land any five stars. But if you look at Elko at Notre Dame, as Texas A&M's DC, he was a very effective recruiter. And DeBoer, I think you've seen it since they got there. Like Ryan Williams, the first guy they signed as a February signee. Ryan Williams is a receiver everybody in the world wanted. So it's not like they didn't know how to do this. They might not have been at places where you could even get in the door with these guys.
They weren't known for it. They definitely were good recruiters. But my question with all that is it more important now with the portal and all this movement to make sure that you do have your coaching, on-field coaching, development, the actual art of coaching on game day and all that tightened up? Because you're gonna transition a lot of your roster regardless each and every year. Is that more important now than having a guy that may be like a, you know, just a rah-rah dude that can go land a bunch of players, but, you know, doesn't hire the right people, can't coach his way out of a paperback?
I was having this discussion with somebody yesterday about assistant coaches, because we were talking about, you know, those guys that are known, and a lot of like D-line coaches especially. There's a lot of D-line coaches out there that are viewed as kind of Pied Piper recruiter types. I don't know that that matters anymore in the age of the portal and NIL. The NIL can take care of a lot of the recruiting stuff. Like you don't have to be the best salesman anymore, because your collective can give you the thing to sell that doesn't require any sort of special salesmanship. And then the portal is what makes better coaching a requirement. Like the schematic piece of it and the development piece of it, so much more important now, because the portal has eliminated the possibility of stacking so many good players that you can cover up your mistakes. Like you have to utilize your roster to the best of your ability, to its maximum potential, or you're going to lose players because they will find the place where they fit and can play. Like the portal has made that way more efficient. And that's tough if you're Alabama, if you're Georgia, if you're Ohio State, where you were used to having depth that no one else could match, where if you had a couple of injuries, it didn't matter, where if another team had a couple of injuries, they were screwed. Like, look at Georgia last year in the SEC championship game at receiver. They were so thin in terms of healthy receivers, I mean, it killed them in that game. And that was the deepest team in America. So if they can have a game where somebody can get them because there's a position group that they're not as deep as they could be. So, I mean, everybody's got that. Everybody's got to deal with that now. And I think that's what makes it more interesting. But to your point, if you don't show these guys how you're going to utilize them and also how you can put them in position to be high NFL draft picks, they're gone. They're going somewhere else where they can get that. And it's definitely evening things out. Now, I like, in terms of the depth piece of it, I think an interesting team to watch this year is Florida State. So Florida State had been really good at picking out of the portal. They've also done better at recruiting out of high school. But look at the portal guys they got this year. Lots of dudes who were not playing at Alabama and Georgia, who probably would have been competing for spots this spring at Alabama and Georgia, but would not have been guaranteed anything. That hurts Alabama and Georgia. And if those guys are as good as FSU thinks they are, well, it might make them a playoff team.
We're talking with Andy Staples here on JC and Morgan. Let's kind of use that as a jumping off point, because you obviously are optimistic about what Kalen DeBoer is going to do at Alabama after speaking to him and kind of putting them under the microscope. There's no reason to believe Georgia's going anywhere soon under Kirby, with the way they've been able to just stockpile recruiting classes. And again, he's a great coach with a good staff, even when they lose guys on the staff. So you mentioned you were in Knoxville. This becomes the every year question for me, and I want your thoughts on it. I've said many times, and I got a chance to repeat it again in Atlanta in December, we're living in the SEC, we're living in an Alabama-Georgia world. Every now and then someone spikes, like an LSU, but for the most part, we're still living with all the changes in college athletics, with NIL, with the portal, and now with the GOAT retiring, we're living in an Alabama-Georgia world. So who is the next team that takes that jump? Is it Tennessee? Is it A&M? Is it LSU? What is Tier 2 going to look like? And when does Tier 2 start to bleed into Tier 1 and maybe add something to
Mike,
an otherwise 1-2 punch?
You forgot the team that beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa last year and made the playoff. They're the also newbies in the SEC now. Texas. So
you tell me, do you think Texas is on that level?
Did they not prove that last year?
Well, they beat
them
one
game.
Alabama
when they played.
Absolutely. But like, this is the ultimate litmus test. This is what makes Texas so fascinating, right? It's like now they've got to play an 8-game SEC slate, and now it's like, okay, can they actually get to Atlanta in the SEC championship
game?
You don't
have to get to Atlanta.
Well, you're right. They could still get a 12-team playoff and eventually 14.
Yeah.
That's going to open doors to Ole Miss,
Alabama, Georgia, and Texas are the ones. And actually, Georgia and Texas, if you go by Vegas, have the higher win totals this year.
Yeah, that's true.
They're the 10.5s. They're the ones that are the favorites to win the conference. But Tennessee and Ole Miss have the schedules for sure, because that's something that everybody needs to be aware of in this new era of divisionless play. Whether it's the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC did it last year, and then obviously the Big 12, you had the round robin. Now they don't, so now schedule draw matters in the Big 12 as well. And that's something we have to look at going into every season, is who got the draw. Now, granted, what we think in the preseason might not come true in the season. Some teams might be better, some teams might be worse. But if we just look at it right now, the path for Ole Miss and the path for Tennessee seem a little bit easier than the path for Alabama, the path for Georgia, the path for LSU, Oklahoma. I think Texas's schedule is certainly not easy. And so that's the other piece of this. Tennessee's an interesting one, because I do if they can split Oklahoma at Oklahoma and Alabama, I'm saying they probably don't win in Athens, or they, that's I'm not real confident in. So they probably don't win in Athens. But if you're 10-2, you're making the playoff. Mm-hmm. Like, and Tennessee's capable of that. Now, they got a tricky one against NC State early, but deepest D line we've seen at Tennessee in a long time. Receiver group seems replenished. It comes down to Nico. Like, how much better is Nico than Joe Milton? And I suspect Nico's going to be a lot better than Joe Milton.
I would hope so. Yeah.
Look at his wheels. I mean, Milton Hooker could run. Milton, Nico could run.
Milton could run. He just didn't want to.
Yeah. I was never really sold on Milton. And I think, I think Hooker though had a historically accurate year, but Nico's a different animal altogether. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
And
that's the key, is how fast does he develop? You know, what can they do with him in that offense? I think it'll be a lot more diverse offense than you saw with Joe. I think a lot of the RPO stuff had to go out the window. A lot of the read option stuff had to go out the window. And obviously that read option is a piece of the RPO. But I think Tennessee's going to be able to do a lot more, which will require a lot more prep for you if you're trying to defend them. And so I think they'd be pretty good. But again, like, when they go to Norman, how good is Oklahoma? I think we're writing off Oklahoma, which seems weird to me, because they don't typically have bad years. Now, the first year under Venables was not great, but last year they were a 10-win team. They beat Texas. Like this, there's no reason to believe Oklahoma doesn't come into the SEC as a very good program and a program that you've got to watch out for.
Well, okay. So in bracket terms, we just gave a lot of chalk, right? We just talked the tops of the top, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee. We threw a little Ole Miss in there. How about a surprise team? How about a team maybe that's projected middle of the pack that you think could actually make some waves this year?
I don't know if there's any surprises because there's so many, like, think about the expectations at Missouri are absurdly high.
Yeah, it's true.
I think Missouri's got a 9.5 win total, and it's like, wait, did you see what they lost on defense? Like,
and the SEC's leading rusher, they lost him too.
Yes. And so you look at all the, like, LSU would be the one, but I wonder about LSU. Like, the defense has to get a lot better. The defense at LSU was as bad as it can possibly be, and the offense was as good as it can possibly be. You have to suspect when you lose Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, that the offense takes a step back. So how much does the defense take a step forward to make them competitive? And remember, they won double-digit games last year. Like, as bad as that defense was, they still won double-digit games. So I don't know that there's necessarily a potential surprise team, because would you be surprised if LSU's good?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't.
No, never. Because they've always got great athletes.
But the questions they got to answer, Mike, to get to that are pretty daunting. Like, it's not going to be easy to get there. But, like you said, they've always got great athletes. And so, you know, does Missouri take a step back, or do they continue to be good? Because if you have that, then I'm not sure where the room is for the surprise. You know,
right?
Like, does Arkansas shock some people with Talon Green coming in, with Bobby Petrino calling plays? Or is it, you know, this is it for Sam? The one I think that has the capability, because they have the athletes to do it, is A&M. A&M, I think, would be the one that would be capable of shocking people. I am surprised when I hear people talk about their own team's schedule and they've got A&M on it. And they're like, oh, that's a win. Like, are you sure about that? Are you sure? Because they got a bunch of dudes, and they're going to be better coached now.
Keep Connor healthy at quarterback.
Exactly. Like, I don't know that a lot of people remember what – I mean, even with Jimbo and Bobby Petrino, which was not the best marriage in the world, when Connor Wigman was healthy, that offense actually looked pretty good. So you put that with Colin Klein, I do think there's a chance that A&M could be the one you don't want to play, where you're like, oh – we were counting this as a win, and now we are very unsure about this thing.
And without the cloud of all the Jimbo noise, and I mean, that became almost an untenable situation. You mentioned Arkansas. I got to ask you about two programs that nobody is predicting great things for. Last time I saw you was at the Steve Spurrier First Year Awards in Gainesville. And I ran into Steve the night before, and I told this story at dinner. And I was with Shane Matthews, and he says, yep, guys, you know what Billy would have to do to get to where we were 12 years in Gainesville? He'd have to go 81-4 over the next 85 games to match our record during the 12 years in Gainesville. I was just like, that is Steve being Steve. I say all that to point out that the expectation level is still high in Gainesville, although they've been kind of off the radar for a while. And yeah, at Arkansas, I mean, every time I'm in Fayetteville, they talk like, you know, they should be competing for much greater stakes. I don't know if Sam Pittman makes it to the end of the year. So when you look at those two situations, obviously birds of a different feather, but just your assessment of what to expect with those two programs this year, and what is the fix? What is the remedy?
Well, Arkansas, I don't know that there's a fix in terms of competing for national titles or anything, because that's what they want, but competing against the teams you have to recruit against, is that ever going to happen? Probably not. That's just it's too hard when especially now that you've got Texas and Oklahoma in the league that are recruiting the same areas that you've historically recruited. You know, that's where you've got a lot of your better players from. So I don't know. The Bobby Petrino hire strikes me as here's our way to get Bobby Petrino back in the head coach's chair if they fire Sam Pittman midseason, because Bobby Petrino's the last guy to win there. And they had to fire him because he obviously lied to his AD, put the put the university at risk in terms of legal liability. And so that is it's just weird. And I like Sam Pittman. I think he's a good coach. I think it's a tough situation and the expectations are probably a little out of whack, but they will make a change if they're as bad as they were last year. Like, they will make a change. Now, you mentioned Florida. Arkansas did come to the Swamp last year, and Arkansas won. That's a bad sign for Billy Napier. That was the game, I think, that if Billy Napier had folks in the fan base that were still holding on and hoping things would turn around, that's where I think they realized, maybe this is kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't see anything that happened in the offseason transfer portal, you know, roster building that changes anybody's interpretation of them. Yes, they signed DJ Lagway and LJ McCray, but like DJ Lagway isn't supposed to be the starting quarterback this year. Graham Mertz is. And Graham was actually one of the pleasant surprises of last year. I thought he played really well. But you lose Trevor Etienne, you lose Princely Emmanuel into the portal. I don't think they're a net better, more talented team than they were last year, and the schedule's harder. So I'm not sure exactly what they're supposed to do to get over the hump.
Clean up pre-snap penalties would be a start, right? As a former offensive lineman?
You know, play 11 players on your field goal extra point block team. Yeah. That's a good one, too. You know, not important enough to have an on-field special teams coach. They're gonna stick with the analyst on that one.
Yeah, got to ask you a couple big picture ones before we go. I know you were certainly covering like so many of us what was going on with the playoff and what was going to be the number and what was going to be the TV deal and is it going to be 12? Oh, wait a minute, it's 14. Okay, when does it turn to 16? Just your overall takeaway of everything that's gone down here recently in really the last 30, 60 days.
It's wild because you think after they spent 4 years designing this, well, it was actually more than 4 years, it was 5 years designing the 12-team playoff, that they'd actually play it once to see if they liked it before they changed it. So, because it sounds like they want to do 14, which 14 is a weird number to me. And I think if we're trying to figure out why you would do 14 instead of 16, which is 16 is the same number of rounds, it's just no buys. The reason you would do 14 is the Big Ten and the SEC want their championship games to be meaningful. They want them to be for that bye. Because I think that's the big concern among all of the conference commissioners right now as they expand the playoff is we've got these cash cow championship games. They're either going to be irrelevant or they're actually going to be actively screwing the team that loses the championship. You heard Kirby Smart talk about that the other day. Like, the team that loses the SEC or the Big Ten championship game is getting totally screwed in the new format. So they've got to figure out how do they balance that, because they don't want to give up the money they're making from that. But logistically, it might not be the best way to do it, because right now, yeah, if you win that game, it's great. You get the bye, all that, you know, all that stuff. You get the highest seed. But if you lose, the team that finished third in the league probably has it better than you do.
What excites you most about, I already know you've always been a free market NIL guy. What excites you most about the future of college football with all the changes that have come down the pike? And what concerns you the most? For example, on the concern part of it, there's if these super conferences keep building up and we have a true AFC-NFC world, it's going to be awfully chilly if you're not invited to either one of those parties.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. And I heard you guys talking about that before I came on. Like, how many teams is it? And we did a fictional 48 team one a few weeks ago, and that sucked, like trying to decide who you would have in it and who you would have getting left out. Mm-hmm. It was awful, especially if we're assuming it coalesces around the SEC and the Big Ten. And I know everybody every week asks me, well, would they kick out Vanderbilt and Indiana? No, they're not kicking out Vanderbilt and Indiana. That's not going to happen. So you need to get them to ask you to join their club. Mm-hmm. So in an ideal world, the number is in the 60s. You have a pretty broad swath of schools, because I think the variety is one of the things that makes college football so much fun. In reality, I don't know if that's what happens. And I don't know how it happens, because a lot of it depends on the business model. A lot of it depends on, do you break off football from the NCAA, or do you have your own, you know, management organization managing football? Because then that helps determine what it ultimately looks like. And my guess is fewer schools will want to share the bulk of the money. So it's probably going to be closer to the 48, but you know, we don't yet know how they're going to get there. You know, a lot of it depends on settling this House versus the NCAA case, which is a big case that was brought by former athletes saying, hey, you know, we would have gotten a bunch of NIL money had you guys not been breaking the Sherman Act. And so like the NCAA is going to lose that case. They're going to have to settle before it goes to trial, because they're going to get destroyed if it goes to trial. And so the schools will end up having to pay a lot of that settlement. I think part of that settlement will be them creating a new business model. And they're just going to figure out how they want to do that. So I don't think we're that far away from it either. That's the part that's interesting, because I've been very outspoken about the SEC schedule, that with the current alignment, they need to go to 9 games, mm-hmm. because if you stay at 8 and you only have one fixed opponent, then you have Texas and Texas A&M in the same conference and they're not playing football every year, which is the stupidest business decision you could possibly make. But I'm not worried about that now, because my thought is if they stay at 16, they're going to go to 9 games for 2026. That's why they flipped the 24 and 25 schedules. But in reality, if we're the chances of them being a 16-team league in 2026, I don't know if that's going to be the case. There may be more expansion realignment before then, and then the 8-9 discussion changes because the scheduling format changes. You might go back to divisions. Who knows? Like, anybody who thinks they know exactly how this is going to go over the next 2 years is lying to you, because even the Greg Sankeys of the world and the Tony Petitis of the world, who will be in control of how it goes, there's still things that are outside their control that are going to affect it, like in the court system, with the national labor relations, all that stuff that they're going to have to react to. And so they don't know what it's going to look like either.
Two quick hitters on the way out. 2027, crystal ball. And again, as you mentioned, we don't know. We're trying to project things that we don't have the answers to, and the people in charge don't have the answers to. 2027, Florida State, Clemson, where are they? What conference?
It's such a good question. I don't think they're in the ACC, but I don't know. Like, I'll put it this way. If I were a Fox executive, and I looked at what the Big Ten has in terms of schedule, I say that looks pretty good when you add Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA into the schedule. But then when I see the SEC release its new schedules with Texas and Oklahoma, I'm like, no. The SEC still got a way better football product than us. We have to make our football product better. And that's where even if Florida State and Clemson would not have been the schools that your Big Ten presidents would have chosen typically, like, think about if you sprinkle the spear and the tiger paw through those Big Ten schedules. Suddenly, those look pretty awesome, like, from a television standpoint.
Right.
That's what I would do. Now, if I were the leaders of the SEC and I thought the Big Ten was going to encroach upon my footprint and take two brands that would give them some really good Southern football, I'd go, you know what? Nope. That belongs with our product. I would defend my borders.
Yeah. And I think like a game of Risk at that point.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because it's one of those things where if the Big Ten doesn't want them, they're in a pretty precarious situation. But my guess is economics will carry the day. They provide tons of value to a Big Ten football schedule. But there's also a lot of value for the SEC in keeping them away from the Big Ten. So that's where you get the tug of war, which I think would be really interesting. And then, like, if you're them, let's say you actually had the choice. Let's say that there's a scenario where they have a choice. Which one would you pick?
I think the fans of Florida State Clemson undoubtedly would want the SEC. That doesn't mean the SEC undoubtedly wants
the administrators
would
probably look at it like, well, it's easier to win in the Big Ten.
Oh, sure. But
from a cultural standpoint, Of course, it's the perfect fit in the SEC. Like Clemson is an SEC school. Florida State should have joined the SEC in 1990. Like it should have been.
A chance. Bobby Bowden said no.
South Carolina, the beneficiary of Florida State saying no.
That's, I mean, and you could look at it two ways. Maybe they don't have the national championships they do if they went to the SEC with more competition. But
I think they would have, because the SEC in the early 90s was not what it is now. Like
that's true. Great point.
I think the Florida State, Florida, and Tennessee, like if Florida State had joined in the early 90s, the clashes between Florida State, Florida, and Tennessee would be spectacular. But I think Florida State still would have won a couple national titles.
I think so, too. I think they would have broke through on a couple. With all the talent that they were amassing at that point, it would have been hard not to. Last one, your other passion, and a lot of people tuning in today, it's going to be their first trip this year to either Norman or Austin. They've never been there. And they want to know where to eat. And they want to know what to get.
Yep.
And even though you're now a svelte Andy Staples, much lighter than your...
Where to eat.
Old playing weight. I know you still know how to throw down. So where do people go in Norman and Austin?
Well, Norman, Terra Humara's, Baker Mayfield's favorite restaurant. It's interesting because you walk in and it's just like your typical Mexican restaurant. It doesn't seem any different than anything else you've seen before. I can't explain why it's so much better. It just is. One quirk. So Norman is essentially, if you've never been there, it is essentially an exurb of Oklahoma City. At this point, Oklahoma City has grown so much, it's basically a suburb. One weird regional quirk about Oklahoma City is queso is free at all the Mexican restaurants. The only place in the country where it's like that.
Winner.
I like that.
And Terra Humara has great queso. So that one, neighborhood jam for breakfast in Norman or OKC. It's like a little mini chain that started out there. It's awesome breakfast brunch place. Austin is, there's so many good places. It's hard. So I'll just stick to the barbecue. Obviously, Franklin Barbecue is the famous one. I will suggest if you're with a group, order in advance. You have to order at least 5 pounds. If you got more than three people, that's fine. Order 5 pounds, go pick it up. Don't wait 4 hours in line. But you could also go to La Barbecue, which is phenomenal. Leroy and Lewis, which does a little bit different stuff than the typical Texas Trinity. I think they do the brisket ribs and sausage on Saturdays, but they do like during the week, all kinds of, like they'll do beef cheek one day and they'll do a whole, you know, like I'll have a lamb thing or they'll do like a brisket smash burger, really good stuff. And then also Terry Black's. So you cannot go wrong getting barbecue in Austin.
Yeah, I will say, having been to both cities multiple times, there's definitely more options for the folks out there in Austin, but you nailed some good ones in Norman as well. Andy, outstanding stuff. Plug your new venue once again, please.
Yep, On Three. So the show is called Andy Staples On Three. We are on the On Three YouTube channel every weekday, 8 to 9 a.m. Eastern time. And also, show gets uploaded to every podcast platform right after that. So if you're an Apple Podcast, Spotify, Amazon, whatever you listen to podcasts on, we're on that. It's just Andy Staples On Three, and hit subscribe.
Fantastic. I enjoyed our shows together back in the day on SiriusXM. And as I've said for many years, I think you're one of the best to do it in this space. And we always appreciate you taking out the time. We'll talk to you down the road before too long.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
You got
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Andy.
Andy Staples, one of the best. Giving us, there's a lot to unpack there. This is why, as to use your term, JC, these interviews this time of year, they're evergreen. For those that are new to the show and you're wondering, well, I wish I didn't miss that Tim Brando interview. I wish I didn't miss that Ross Dellinger interview. At this time of the year, they're timeless. We're not talking about week five results. We're talking about things that are pervasive in the macro world of college football. So you got a lot to catch up on if you're new to the show.
Sure, and I'll tell you this. You can go to Chiefs YouTube / Chiefs Sports South Carolina. That's where it lives right. Our show lives right now. It will live other places in the near future, but Chiefs Sports South Carolina. And if you go to the playlist, there's conversations and highlights from JC and Morgan. So if you just want to catch up on the interviews and not necessarily the day-to-day analysis, week-to-week analysis, which would be old, you can go right there to that playlist and see. We cut it down. It's just the interview. You got Dan, you got Tom Luganbill,
You'll have Andy and all the people that we've had since we've been streaming. I'd have to go back and really dig to get the old interviews where we're just on podcast form. But one day we'll get something out there with that. But yeah, it's called Conversations and Highlights, JC and Morgan. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel to Chief Sports South Carolina. That would help us a lot. And you get lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff. As always, as JC mentions, if you like what you hear, give us a good review. We love hearing from you folks. You can go to jcandmorgan.com. Questions, comments, complaints, gripes, recommendations. You want to submit a haiku poem, we'll read it on the air. Whatever you want, jcandmorgan.com. We do have a mailbox segment there. JC and Morgan presented, of course, in part by Site Pro. Site Pro Rentals, when renting equipment, important to have a local, easy-to-do business with friends in the industry who carry the newest equipment and create efficiency for you and your project job site. If you want to do work with local, easy-to-do business with professionals and are ready for better equipment rental, call our friends at Site Pro 972-RENT-NOW. That's 972-736-8669 for better equipment rental. That's going to do it for us this week. Speaking of Tom Lugan, Bill Lugs hit us up yesterday on our little text chat. Said, "Hey guys, I'm ready to come back on." Well, as we always tell Lugs, it's an open invitation. So Tom Lugan, Bill, the man, the myth, the Lugs, will be back with us next week on this very same program, which is again is on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Facebook, Twitter, and everything in between.
Yep, X. And I'll leave everybody with this. Maybe they can do some research and let us know via the mailbag on the front of jcmorgan.com. If Bobby Petrino is named the head coach at Arkansas, will he be the first coach in college football history in the modern era? Because back then people used to – probably there's somebody back then that coached that's become a Power 5 head coach at two different schools twice. Because he went back to Louisville, remember?
That's right.
Dude, we all remember going, you know, the coaches that went back home, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
It rarely works out.
Right.
Johnny Majors went back to Pitt, John Robinson went back to Southern Cal. It rarely works out. But it ended up, despite a Heisman Trophy, not working out for Petrino at Louisville. So this would be the second time he has gotten a Power 5 head coaching gig for the second time.
And I mean, I was down there just a few weeks ago. I mean, if you were to ask your common hog what's going to happen in 2024, oh, he's going to get the job somewhere about week 7. It's just like that. Again, that doesn't mean that Hunter Jurecich, the AD, is going to do that, but that's certainly how a lot of those fans feel. And it's hard not to reminisce about the glory years of when he was running stuff in Fayetteville. Now, they still didn't have great dominating defenses. That's been the biggest problem as I see it for Arkansas. But, man, could they score. Well, they were a lot of fun to watch on the offensive side of the football. We hope you thought this was a lot of fun to watch. We appreciate it for our producer extraordinaire Phil Mullinax behind the scenes, and for JC Sherbert, this is Mike Morgan saying so long for now. We'll see you next week on another installment of JC and Morgan.